Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, bringing you a Floydcast number 57 for March 16, 2015. This is the day after Pi Day, the 3.1415 day. 538.com of statistics, that's not fair. 538.com, an analysis site that analyzes everything from elections to sports to miscellaneous stuff. They just had a little bit about Pi, and in the part that I read, it was talking about how many digits of pi do you know? Some people just know 3.14. So I immediately went, how much do I know it? I was like 3.14159. And then I sort of petered out. It turns out something like 15% of people know that many digits. Anyway, a little bit of trivia. Someone else said, you know, 3.14 is as close to pi as 22 over 7. So you could argue that July 22nd, the 22 over 7 day, is also Pi Day. Honestly, though, my first thought about Pi Day was, oh, good, another thing that doesn't matter that they're going to talk about, because it doesn't matter. So it goes. True of the week. Just read this story. Keonti Terrell, man dies in West Palm Beach shooting. Officers responded, certain address. They located 20-year-old Keonti Terrell. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The first name Keonti, K-E-O-N-T-E, it's a 797. Terrell, just like Terrell Owens, 189. Total, 887, 7 destiny. What they say about the 189, it'll shorten your life. Sad, 20 years old and he's gone. More upbeat, I have an update on my Slate fail story. My latest Slate fail story. A listener volunteered to read the story, give a little summary of what the person is trying to say, and then some of their own thoughts at the end. So this was a 5,000-word story that I was asking someone to condense, because I couldn't plow through it. It was just, to me, so poorly written that it just drives you away. It keeps shouting, why bother? All right, so this listener said, the film, so I guess what it is someone has written a piece about a film, about a documentary. I didn't even know that. The film that follows portrays college as so dangerous for young women that the viewer is left with the sense that these students would have been better off posting college rejection videos and staying home. It shows young women as prey, frequently assaulted, that part I got, frequently ignored by their universities and law enforcement when they try to bring charges. The movie, from director Kirby Dick, features numerous interviews with women who describe horrific experiences, and their testimony has raw emotional power. The film traffics in alarmist statistics and terrifying assertions. Not only is sexual assault an expected part of the college experience, the filmmakers assert once it happens, victims generally discover that no officials at their schools will take action or even care. These callous, indifferent administrators coddle perpetrators, systematically cover up crimes in an effort to maintain their school's good, if false, reputation. The Hunting Ground, which is the name of the documentary, does not address the changes OCR has wrought in the ways campuses handle sexual assault accusations. Instead, it declares there are virtually no resources for victims. And then the person said, that's all you need to know. that you now have the full story. And then they give just a little one-sentence, one-paragraph summary. And they say, in my opinion, the above words by the writer put this story in a nutshell. My opinion is that the writer feels that the documentary is too hard on colleges and too easy on people who accuse. And there have been changes not addressed in this documentary. Well, it was nice of them to summarize as well, but, you know, their little condensed bit at the top, I got the gist of it, right? Someone does a documentary, someone doesn't like it. Let's dig a little deeper. The documentary was done by Kirby Dick. I've talked about Kirby Dick in the past. I think the guy's excellent. And I've made a point of saying how much I enjoyed this particular person, this documentarian. And we even analyzed his name. He has a first name that's not Kirby or Dick, or he has a middle name. And when you add it all together, he has an 8 destiny, successful destiny. And also, by the way, the 6 and the 8 destiny, the good destinies, are also more fair. So I'm not totally convinced of the person complaining about the documentary. It seems to me unlikely that a person making a documentary, Kirby Dick especially, is going to get things majorly wrong. That just seems unlikely. And when you look at this person's complaint about the documentary, it says the film traffics in alarmist statistics and terrifying assertions. When I hear that, I hear shill, I hear troll. I hear professional person hired to write piece to shoot down documentary. Some of the other remarks the Slate writer makes. The movie features numerous interviews with women who describe horrific experiences, and their testimony has raw emotional power. Yeah, they're going to have horrific experiences from the sounds of it, and their testimony has raw emotional power. Yes, it does. But when you say raw emotional power, you're trying to be emotional. You don't need the word raw. You don't even need the word emotional. It has power because it's horrific and they're telling you their story. But they're trying to imply that in some way the documentary is excessive or too emotional, too extreme. Can it be too extreme when it's about rapes or alleged rapes on campus? I don't think it can be too extreme. So I think this writer is a total fake. Someone who's been hired to say something basically on behalf of the colleges or universities to say we care. I don't think colleges and universities care. I don't think they care at all. The cost of going to college and university has shot up in recent years much faster than inflation. Why is it doing that? They're trying to make them elitist. The other thing is that the elite are rather well known for doing more criminal than average things, especially in certain categories of crime. And the category of crime this documentary is about is the kind of thing they're known for doing. So let's look at this from that perspective.
So you have elite people at this college or university. Their dad's a judge. Their dad's a billionaire, whatever. They do crazy things on campus. And this kind of thing happens all the time. And then dad covers it up. And then mom contacts the university and says, don't write about it. Bury it. Well, all of that happens all the time. So a documentarian that reveals this and talks about this is simply doing his job. So, this Slate fail story is a total fail because the person's totally bogus who wrote it, in my opinion. But I would like to thank the person who suffered through this entire article and then nicely summarized it for me. One thing I was a little optimistic about with this article, summarizing it, I figured that it could be summarized in 100 words. This person took 200. So, comparing 5,000 words versus 200, why would something be 25 times too long? Well, they're trying to make something out of nothing. Their article is nothing. Their article is a fake. They have one point. We care. Their article could have been two words. We care. But they don't care. If they did care, it would show in their results. So then you have to bury it. You have to hide it. You have to go on and on. Torture people. And then someone at some point will reference that article and say, no, that's been refuted. See, look at this article here. This unreadable article here. True of the week, Terry Pratchett. Discworld series author passes away at age 66. Well, 66 is kind of young, right? It's a little too young. This guy was an interesting study. I went and did my usual due diligence when someone relatively famous passes away. I want to know their numbers, I want to know their birthday, and then I want to read their quotes. This guy has a lot of quotes, maybe something like 100. And that's to be expected when you're an author, right? If an author passes away and they have no quotes, something is wrong. I'm thinking of someone like Danielle Steele. When she passes away, though, the quote sites will say, I got nothing. Just look at the pictures. Fabio's picture. Anyway, I never knew Terry Pratchett. I'm not into, you know, sci-fi and all that stuff. But they say he's written 70 novels, and I guess he succumbed to Alzheimer's after 8 years. Let's look at his birthday. He's born April 28, 1948. When you reduce it, 414 for a 9. And now let's look at his name, Terry, 595. Tremendously intense, active, go, go, push, push. Well, he wrote 70 novels. There are not too many that write that many novels. So how do you do that? He didn't even live 70 years. He's writing more than one a year. The average novel is something like 100,000 words. I was working out just in my head all the stuff I'd done with physics. I've written the equivalent of one novel. All my physics put together. Well, one of the things that Terry did, he had a little personal commitment to himself. When he finished a novel, he would force himself to start the next novel that day. How many people do you know that would do that? Well, it's all the five in action. The five drives itself way beyond any other number. You could pick three other numbers that you think they drive themselves. And you add them together, they don't drive themselves as much as the five. Not at all. The five is an unhealthy number, even in the birthday.
Maybe that's pushing it, but really, in this world, in this very controlled, restricted world, it's actually true because the five doesn't like restriction. This world is hard on the five, even the five in the birthday. So this guy pushed himself to death. Last name, Pratchett 663, 268 total, 8 destiny. Well, 8 destiny, he was successful, right? 268 total, interesting the 2, and he gets Alzheimer's. My little theory with Alzheimer's is if you're 2-ish, you'll be more likely to get it. I think it's also diet and drugs, you know, are factors. They say, I don't know the guy. It's too bad he went early. I'm sure he was in the middle of a novel. This guy never stopped working. I mean, when you have 70 novels that you've done and you're well known, you don't need the money. He couldn't stop. Just think about that. He even has a successful destiny. We know he's got money in the bank, literally. And he couldn't stop. When I was young, elementary school, I could write. I could just like write and write. I remember one teacher who, her and I completely did not see eye to eye. But I remember how much she enjoyed my writing. Well, I stopped my writing shortly after that. Streaming writing and streaming words is not hard. What is hard is making it important, making it valuable and correct and what the world needs. The world doesn't need a million new books a year, and that's about what it gets. I'm just throwing out a figure. Again, feel free to email me and tell me I got the second decimal place wrong. But we don't need a million new books a year, especially fiction. I think we need a new fiction, oh, let's say 3. We just don't need it. It doesn't help the world. If anything, it's status quo. Once they've set up their system of control, they don't want anything to change. They don't want any ratios to change. So they set up all kinds of little things like top 10 lists. Top 10 books in fiction, top 10 books in nonfiction. And you turn to your paper and you'll find those sections. Well, when you have a top 10 books, it implies there are thousands of books and we've done all this hard work to let you know here are the best ones. And you naturally, to yourself, you go, well, I should at least read these 10. These are the best. I might be really missing something. And yet the whole category has no value. That's how they work. They changed the conversation, set the saying. Like with that Kirby Dick documentary, they didn't like the result of the documentary, so they have to change the conversation. So the way they change it is they say he was sensationalizing it. And like I say, how do you sensationalize when someone gets raped or allegedly gets raped? You interview them, they're upset. How do you sensationalize that? How do you make that more than what it is? It's already big. It's already newsworthy. It's already harsh. I just don't even believe anything that writer said. Anyway, poor Terry Pratchett, who, despite having a good destiny, even a good last name, healthy, likable last name, he had a horrendous first name. I've met and had to work around a Terry, and this experience was 30 years ago, and I had to work around a Terry. And let me tell you, tense. This guy was a tense guy to work around. And the people that were working with him, were all more refined and healthy and calm than average. In other words, we weren't doing it to the guy. He just couldn't stop doing it to himself. He smoked. At that time, you know, smoking was becoming less popular. This guy worked with computers. Your equipment breathes. It has fans and it sucks air in to cool itself and it shoots the air out. When you smoke, all the gunk, and it puts gunk into the air, and that gunk gets sucked into your computers and it breaks your computers. Especially in those days, they used floppy drives. Floppies, literally physical contact between the plastic floppy media that stores the information and a reed head. Well, you gunk it all up with smoke. This guy didn't stop smoking. That's what the five in your name will give you, non-stop. It's hellish. Even when you don't have the hell combination, although he had one very similar, your life is hell, and it doesn't stop. I've seen the five qualities sicken people. I've seen whole families that are sickened because they got the five in the family name. Truly a horrific number to have in the name. There is a story on Slashdot. It was an ask Slashdot. People can submit questions to Slashdot, to the populace, to the reading membership, and then people will comment. The question was, why does science appear to be getting things increasingly wrong? Well, what a great question. What was interesting was the little summary. There's always a little summary. Sometimes it'll have one link. This summary had like 10 links. In other words, 10 examples that the summarizer was showing of how corrupt or bad or off-target science is these days. Recent revelations of heavily policy-driven or even falsified science have raised concern, blah, blah, blah. It's not purely a question of blah, blah, blah. Scientists themselves are increasingly incentivized to game the system for improved career prospects, more funding, or simply because they perceive everyone else to do it too. Hey, me too. I wanna lie. Science has come to that. Hey, I wanna lie too. Even discounting outright fraud or manipulation of data, and those were like examples with links, the widespread use of methodologies known to be invalid plagues many fields and is leading to an increasing inability to reproduce recent findings, the so-called crisis of reproducibility. Did we need a fancy term? That puts the very basis of our reliance on scientific research results at risk. Of course, one could claim that science is, by nature, self-correcting, but the problem appears to be getting worse before it gets better. Is it time for more scientists to speak out openly about raising the level of transparency and honesty in their field? Yes, it is. Next question. I think this had quite a lot of people discussing it, like hundreds of people, 250 I think at last count, discussing this question. Well, it's a good one. Good thing to talk about. Somewhat related, I just came out with my latest physics paper. I call it The Comedy of Science. And the subtitle is, How Physics Got in the Mess It's in Today. Well, same story, right? Physics today is messed up because we have bad assumptions that no one has caught, or that no one has felt the need to correct, or that prestigious physicists go, yeah, this bad assumption is correct. That's what they're doing. So what inspired my latest paper was Rupert Sheldrake, a relatively unknown but very interesting academic from England. And he wrote The Dogma of Science, dogma implying like religion, implying something that you follow like a religious person follows religion. And he had 10 points, saying the laws of nature are fixed, nature is purposeless, minds are inside heads, and are nothing but the activities of brains. Unexplained phenomena are illusory, in other words, they don't exist. He had 10 of those points. I tried reading the book, it wasn't, to me, I couldn't read it, but I got the 10 points, and I wanted to do my own paper about the dogma of science. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I was accumulating a whole bunch of links, and I still got those links and stories to sort of, you know, be my feedstock to come up with a paper. But then I came up with an angle, and that's why the title, The Comedy of Science. And what I do is I compare each scientist with a well-known comedian or with a well-known celebrity. For example, Isaac Newton, the first great scientist, he was all work and no play. He worked all day, every day. He never even got married. I don't even know if he was ever with a woman, intimate with a woman. His whole life. It was science and that's it. So I said, you know, that's kind of out of balance. And I said, the comedian that he needed was not someone that is like him. In some cases, I used a comedian that was like the scientist, the physicist. And in other cases, I used someone that's like the polar opposite. So in the case of Newton, I said, he brings to mind Bob Hope. Bob Hope was a humanitarian. He really cared about people. There's a picture I include in the story of Bob Hope, age 88, addressing the troops. He used to do that all the time. He was famous for it. He did it for 60 years, addressing the troops. Just that alone is unreal. Bob Hope, in the birthday, was a 2. Well, what's the most humanitarian number? On the positive side, it's a 2 quality. Bob, 641, it's a very strong positive combination. It's like Bob Barker. By the way, Bob Barker, you want to see the 641 in action. Bob 641, Barker 641. Is Bob Barker positive? Well, you better believe he is. You should check him out. You may have to go to YouTube now, but this is a guy that he figured out how to live life, and he did it for 30 years, 40 years, maybe 50 years. His careers were long. Even Price is Right was like 35 years, and then he did Truth or Consequences for something like 11. I guess we're up to 46 years right there. You know, he's a real going concern, and Bob Hope was the same way. Really for the same reasons, the same numeric reasons, that 641, the drive, the push. Bob Barker had a 2 destiny, Bob Hope was a 2, and also Hope is 268. So both of them had the 2 around. Without the 2 around, the person doesn't care about others. They're a little too positive, too forceful, and, you know, get out of my way, I'll do it. But the 2 is always, you know, wanting to hear from others and wanting to encourage others. So with each of these scientists, I sort of gave a comparative person who either revealed my true dislike or disrespect of the scientist, or In many cases, it showed their greatness, brought out their greatness. Like I equated Max Planck. Planck never really did a lot with his career, in my opinion, summarizing. But he came up with the Planck length, the Planck size, and that in itself was so profound. It had such a long tail, such a long afterlife. It was enough. It was a big contribution. And I say he was like Bill Hicks. They were underrated. When Bill Hicks was alive, he was kind of underrated. You know, he's become very popular, but he's become popular after he died. They were studying contrasts. Planck stumbled across his greatest find, trying to answer the black body problem, a heat problem. How does your oven, your microwave work? When you try and calculate what temperature things should be at based on the energy going in, you get the wrong number. And Planck figured it out, and he figured it out by his Planck scale. That energy was quantized. He didn't realize that it also implied that there was a finite size to things, the Planck scale. He just kind of came up with a number by sort of a guess, a fluke, got lucky, he was desperate, but it turned out to have vast repercussions. Well, in contrast, Hicks's life was short and very purposeful. Bill Hicks always knew what he was going to be, and he always was it. For most of Bill Hicks's life, three quarters of his life, he was a comedian. Even when he was in school, and I was going to say elementary school, he was a comedian. And Bill Hicks also has a long tail. Bill Hicks really penetrates when he talks. Bill Hicks is not allowing you to get too comfortable, to have too many beers. He wants you uncomfortable. And good comedians, they want you uncomfortable. Well, hopefully that's my goal in this article, is I want people to be uncomfortable. I want physicists to be uncomfortable with the way things are. Physics is in a mess. And you have to see the cause for what it is. So, quite proud of it. It's tied for my longest articles. I have a lot of quotes in there. That's one thing I noticed. I sort of went back to look. And the first five physics talks, consequences of a spring loop theory talks, I didn't have too many quotes from outside sources. I typically quote from Wikipedia, and that would be about it. But I decided to, you know, sort of scour the field for quotes, for physics quotes, and I accumulated hundreds of them. And now when I do a talk, I go through those hundreds, probably almost 1,000 quotes, and I choose the ones that are the very best ones for the talk that I'm writing. So it was satisfying to bring it all together, to have an angle which is a useful angle. It furthers the story. It advances the story, is the way they say it. And it allows me to get that dogma thing off my chest. Physics is religious. As simple as that. You would think every physicist is not religious. And probably most of them are not religious in the normal sense of the word. They don't go to church. They don't believe in a G-O-D. But they act like science is the G-O-D. And it's ridiculous. You know, there's nothing wrong with liking the scientific method. I try and use the scientific method in my life. But I don't use it in the way that it's pushed on me. I have seen, as Sheldrake says, unexplained phenomena. I've seen those phenomena, like the water witching, the divining, where you cut a branch from a tree and you hold it in your hands and bang, it tells you where the water is. I've seen that in action. I don't have any doubt that it works. And I've also seen the lousy tests that Richard Dawkins did in one of his documentaries, I think it was a series, to supposedly prove that it doesn't work. And it was embarrassing how lacking in life Mr. Dawkins' simulation was. Small wonder that it didn't work. You can knock the life out of things. You can knock the life out of people. And that's what we get a lot of these days. Dogma knocks the life out of people. It says, we don't care what you think. You have to follow our principles. And in the case of physics, try to extend our principles. But if you go against our principles, we will abandon you. We will make fun of you. You will be a laughingstock. That's physics today. Do it our way. Even though it's completely ludicrous and there's no chance for it making sense, let alone being useful, do it our way or we will bury you. True of the week. French TV series dropped. Two helicopters were involved in a fatal mid-air collision. Everyone in both helicopters died. All right, so there's a French TV series called Dropped. Now, one thing that sort of struck me as weird, I went to Wikipedia and investigated this. Dropped is an English word. So I was like, well, what is the French word for it? Well, there isn't one. The series is called Dropped. And the production company that's making this series is TF1. Two helicopters hitting each other. It's a tragedy. Everyone dies. The production company TF1, what is TF1 reduced to? because that's what everyone is under that umbrella. It's like if you work for IBM, you're under the combination IBM. By the way, IBM, very good combination, 966. Well, International Business Machines Incorporated, the full legal name, is an even better name of an innate destiny. And, you know, IBM shows that. They're stable over the years. Well, this production company, TF1, is a 999. The combination of accidents and losses and tragedies. There was 10 people that passed away. Some of them were high-profile French athletes. Some of them were, you know, the director of the series, French journalists. There was a production doctors, two doctors like that were on the set all the time. They died. And, of course, the two pilots. Well, it was kind of interesting. I was like, what I really need is the name of the pilots. Because those are the ones, and it would only take one of them, because the helicopters hit each other. It would only take one of them to be in a bad cycle, to hit the other helicopter and everyone dies. Unfortunately, I don't have their names. What is interesting is I grouped the people by their occupation. So they list three high-profile French athletes, Florence Arthaud, Alexis Vastine, Camille Muffet. When you look at their combinations, you see common numbers. Of course, the 5 quality, and you see the 7 quality. The director wasn't like that at all. And it kind of makes sense, right? He's making a documentary. He's not an athlete. His name, Laurent Sebastnik. Laurent, 911. Sebastnik, 123. 134 total. I mean, his numbers are 1, 2, 3, and 4. This wasn't a deep guy. The journalists, Lucy May Dalby and Volodya Guinara, they're much more even numbers, almost totally even numbers. 865, 628, 584, 4 Destiny, the other one 426, 472, 898 had nothing but even numbers. In fact, perfectly even numbers. And again, they have a different occupation, a different role in this. They're journalizing, they're documenting what's going on. You don't want them to be up and down. You want them to be even-tempered, right? So the even numbers are that even-tempered, even-keel, more consistent numbers. There's two doctors, Edouard Gilles, Edouard 685, Gilles 551. This guy is interesting, has hell for last name, five-ish first name, this doctor, and he dies in an accident, right? A moving accident. And so this doctor had a worse-than-average experience compared to other doctors. And look at his fives, major fives. What about the other one? You won't believe it. Bryce Gilbert, Bryce 551, B-R-I-C-E, Gilbert, G-U-I-L-B-E-R-T, 854, for a 415 total, 5 destiny. Both of them had the hell combination. Both of them had fives in at least two positions. Both of them have a five-ish accident. So it turned out the doctors were the most interesting to look at. As I say, if I had the pilots, I would go with that. Pete's. There's been a bit of an ongoing story here. I call it a true of the week, but it might be a week old. Unsubstantiated child neglect finding for free-range parents. All right, so these parents were investigated by Child Protective Services because the crime that they committed was they let their kids walk home from school. I guess they have two kids. One is age 6 and one is age 10. 6-year-old is in grade 1, and I imagine the 10-year-old is in grade 4. And they would walk home together. Without parents around. Now, when I went to school, I walked home from grade 1. That was it. There was no question. There was never adults around. In fact, I do remember this was a school of 1,200 kids, an enormous school. And I remember seeing occasionally one or two cars with parents taking kids to or from school. The proportion was, let's say, one person in 100 was taken to school or picked up from school by their parent. 99% of the people made their own way home from grade 1. Fast forward 40 years, I guess almost 50 years, and you have parents being in danger of losing their children altogether to the state because they're allowing their kids to walk home at age 10. It's really kind of a depressing story. The parents, let's look at the parents. Danielle Maitiv, Danielle 268, Maitiv. M-E-I-T-I-V, 516. Well, you want to talk about an independent family, 516. You want to talk about people that think, hey, our kids should learn and be exposed to the real world and figure things out at a fairly early age. That's what you expect for a 516. Her total, 775 total, 5 destiny. Accident looking for a place to happen. What about his total? Alexander, 393, and then the Maitiv, 819, total 9 destiny, the losing destiny, right? Apparently they are somehow associated. There's mention of an organization, which is just trying to find it in the notes. I got a lot of notes of this story. And there's an organization that, I think they call it Free Range Parenting. Well, the bottom line is these people were investigated. There was no, like, prosecution of them. But they even say the case is going to stay open and, you know, we're going to keep an eye on you. So now they're like, well, what are we supposed to do? We believe in letting them walk home, that when nothing happened. We think it's reasonable. And now, basically, not only is their life wrecked from the incident, but their life is wrecked going forward. They're challenging their right to let their kids walk home by themselves. By the way, these two, the Mitivs, they're both scientists. They believe that children learn self-reliance by being allowed to make choices, build independence, and progressively experience the world on their own. You know, for what it's worth, I don't feel like you have to walk home by yourself at age 6. I'm not saying that that's what all parents should do and that's good parenting. But the reality is that in many cases, both parents work. In many cases, you know, the school day, especially when you're young, is shorter than the work day. And so it's impossible for the parents to be there unless one of the parents is not working. And nowadays, they've sucked so much money out of the system, we all have to work. So an impossible situation is being created. And then you got Child Protective Services jumping in and going, aha, you are in this impossible situation and have no way out. We're going to prosecute you. The CPS officials have said they are guided in part by a state law that says children younger than 8 must be left with a reliable person who is at least 13. So it comes down to a debate about the age numbers. The law addresses children locked or confined in a building, which wasn't happening, dwelling, motor vehicle, or other enclosed space, but does not mention children outdoors on a walk. So they use the law that's not applicable to try and destroy a family's life. Why? Well, because it's Child Protective Services. Your basic nightmare. Welcome to fascism. Alright, I have a story of True of the Week. I call it the stupidest article ever. The headline says, Brilliant Car User Interfaces from Monument Valley's Design Geniuses. You know, gotta say, that sounds kind of promising, right? When you go there and you look at the first picture, I see the most ugly car interface I have ever seen. It shows a Ferrari. And when you look through the steering wheel, you see the standard instrument cluster where, you know, you have the speed in the center and you have a couple of things on either side. Well, the speedometer shows a grand total of the numbers 2 and 3. It shows nothing else. It doesn't show little ticks. It doesn't show a range of your speed from, you know, 0 to 160 or whatever. It doesn't show a red line, or sometimes they have an 85 mile an hour mark. Like, don't go, you know, we don't recommend going beyond there. Doesn't show anything else. It shows a 2 and a 3. This is this brilliant user interface. What about the rest of the instrument cluster? On the right-hand side, it shows another little circle. It's impossible to tell what it is, and it has a different number inside. It says 24. On the left-hand side, there's a, like I say, there's a big, usually a big speed circle, and there's smaller circles on either side. On the left-hand side, all you see is the Ferrari logo, which is a horse that's rearing up on its hind legs. So there's nothing on the left. And by the way, when you're looking through the steering wheel to look at all this, in the center of the steering wheel is the Ferrari logo again. Enormous in size, like we're talking a 2 or 3 inch sized horse. So we have two horses, the numbers 23 and 24, with no context for any of the numbers or anything about the interface. And this writer is saying this is a brilliant car interface by Monument Valley, which is totally irrelevant, design geniuses. So let's have a look at the writer's name, because they're clearly spectacularly useless at writing an article. The writer's name is Liz Stinson. Well, I've talked about a Liz in the past. I had the misfortune of working with a Liz. Possibly the most useless combination on the face of the earth. Now, I didn't say deadly or violent or any of those things. No, they're not that. They're just completely useless. It's a two quality, this person I had to work with, which is kind of like the wrong phrase. This person I had to work around. They would bring their knitting. They would knit during work hours and talk and knit and talk. talking and dating, lots of both. We had a rule that because we cared for people and these people were sort of easily triggered, we had a rule that when your shift ended, you had to leave. You had to leave within 5 minutes. This person routinely would stay up to an hour. Why? Because the new shift was coming in and she wanted to talk to the new people coming in, the new staff. The whole point of caring for people, especially when you're chronically understaffed, is you should be working. And if staff are talking to staff, you're not doing your job. And there's also, it sets up a tension where it's like you're showing disrespect to the clients. You're supposed to put the clients first. She consistently put them last. So, our wonderful article writer, Liz Stinson, 922 first name, disaster for a first name. What about the last name, Stinson? 652, more of the two quality. So, this person is not scientific. You're writing about an interface. Interfaces are designed by engineers. They're designed by professionals who that's what they do. They've focused their life on that, and they've learned their craft. So this is a person without craft writing about something they know nothing about and choosing the ugliest dashboard I have ever seen in my life. If I was given a Ferrari that looked like that, I would get rid of the car only because of the dashboard. It's that ugly and useless and tacky. I think I genuinely almost get angry in thinking about this person and what they wrote. It's that bad. That's rare for me. I say, this instrument cluster is, without a doubt, the most useless cluster I have ever seen, and I go back half a century. By the way, this Liz Stinson, her next writing article is going to be about brain surgery. More Pete's. Need to get back on keel here. Even keel. Must be calm. Drank some good coffee yesterday. Helping plant trees again. My wife and I joined over 100 people. I forget the exact numbers. You know, they have such a great crew. People volunteer. They donate food. Often when we plant trees, the owner comes out and they're like, oh, hello there. This is great. And I've got soup for everybody. And then they carry the soup to the Friends of Trees, wherever they're, you know, being hosted, to the kitchen there. And I saw one of the people that we planted their tree yesterday, and I saw them in the kitchen later on. I was thanking the kitchen people, and she's like, and thank you for the tree. And it's just such a great thing. I encourage everybody to experience donating your time to plant trees. Find a place in your area and do it. Come up with an excuse and make a neighborhood planting. Knock on your neighbor's doors and get them all to, some of them to buy some trees, and then get an expert in there, an arborist or whatever, and learn how to plant a tree and then do it as a community. It's really and truly wonderful. We had kids yesterday and they were on bikes and everyone was on bikes. Almost every single person was on bikes except for my wife and I with the truck. That's a first. You know, we always see the bike people. There's always a few of them every week, but we had a whole crew like that, including the crew leaders, everything. They have trailers, like the kind you pull behind the bike, and they carried all the tools. There wasn't even a question. The tools just disappeared, and it's like, where are they? Oh, they're on the bikes already. It was really kind of great. It was raining a little bit, so, you know, a little more challenging, but okay. One of these things where if you're not working, it feels like rain. It's a little cold, but as soon as you start working, you don't even notice. As we got near the end of our batch of trees to plant, we got a cry for help from another crew. And they, as it turned out, had a really bad break. They were short people when they started because people went to other crews. And then in the middle of planting, someone had to go with their child. And then by the time I got there, this truck driver, it was at his house. And he was like, okay, I'm done. I don't want to go on. If you want to drive my truck, go ahead. But and so he walked away from it. And so they were down to like 3 people, I think. Might have been 4. Well, normally a crew is up to like 12. So then they had the idea, well, instead of driving this other guy's truck, why don't we just leave it there and we'll transfer everything to Floyd's truck. So that's what we did. We now have all their tools, plus all our tools, plus their trees, plus we had one tree that didn't work out. We didn't plant it because it wasn't basically healthy enough. We had all their buckets and our buckets. We had the tubs that the trees used to be in from them and the tubs that our trees used to be in. We had all those tubs in the back. It was great. And so then we went to the final stop, and their final stop was 4 trees. So we had already finished our 11 or 12, and they were at least 4 trees behind. You know, they truly did need help. Well, these trees took a while, because we only had, I think, 5 of us to do the last 4 trees. And we went at it. And I think it took about an hour. And we all worked really hard, which is really great. It's really great to be part of a crew where everybody is working really hard. And we had to wash the tools at the end. That's one of the, please wash the tools at the end so they won't rust and whatnot. Well, we had two sets of tools to wash. And the crew leader was super thorough. Everyone just did a really good job. Everything about it was just, we did a first-class job under challenging conditions. Well, you get back and, you know, you unload the truck and you go and get a little bite to eat and then you're done. Well, the food has never tasted so good. Oh, I ate twice as much as I normally do at the end of planting. My body, like I ate a slice of pizza, like a large slice. And literally, it was a non-stop motion of eating. I wasn't like not chewing it. I was chewing it and swallowing it, but at no point was there a pause. And then there was like, I went and got more bread, and there was a soup, or it was like a chili, vegan, a healthy vegetarian chili. And it was like almost pure, like beans and the different kinds of beans you get, just a really thick sauce. And then I went and got a little dessert. A little bit of coffee. And of course, when I got home, I ate pretty healthily too. You know, you burn the calories. Just feels so great, such a, you know, to help someone, to help the people with their trees. You know, it's just, wow, man. It is a high. It is an absolute high. For all the people that are addicted these days, they're addicted because they don't have natural highs in their life. You can change that. You can teach your kids to have natural highs. There's nothing wrong with a high. Nothing at all. What's wrong is when you do too much of it, when you live for that only. I don't live for planting trees every day. I don't want to plant trees every day. I like it once a week. It's just about perfect. It's a 3-hour stint. Usually yesterday went a little long. It was 4 hours. 4 hours once a week. We can all do that. Oh, it's wonderful. So speaking of selfish people, here's a story from this last week. Russell Brand tried to block premiere of documentary. Okay, bottom line, this is a documentary about this Brand guy. Brand is even in the title, I just don't see it here. Russell Brand is a troubled visionary who embraced the superficial and doped-up times in which we live. Just look at that sentence. He's a troubled visionary. Does that make sense? Are visionaries troubled? I don't think it makes any sense. If you're troubled, you're troubled. Whatever you're doing is screwed up. You better change. If you're a visionary, it implies that you not only have your life together, you not only can function and be successful in today's world, you can see a better world. You can say to everyone, hey, follow me, I'm the Pied Piper, come this way. So troubled visionary, that phrase doesn't even make sense. Who embrace the superficial? Do you embrace the superficial? No, you fall into it. You fall into bad habits. And doped up times, he embraced doped up times. He's a drug addict, a former drug addict. You know, that in itself, so what? But the thing is, when you were a former drug addict, you have to abandon that and move away from that and learn your lessons. And when you do that, it shows you're a little bit humble. Gotta say this, Russell Brand, I have never had a greater disrespect for an actor from day one than Russell Brand. I think everything about this guy is reprehensible. I'm uncomfortable with this guy. He's not in the slightest bit funny. I've never bought into the Russell Brand hype for even 1 second. He reminds me of someone like Chris Rock or Ben Stiller. Those two, you know, supposedly Chris Rock, I remember someone telling me, this is quite some time ago, telling me that Chris Rock was the greatest comedian in America. And we were chatting, or I would have said, huh? And as to Ben Stiller has a talent, and his talent is directing movies and starring in romantic comedies and more serious movies. But Ben Stiller, when he first started out, he just reminds me of a deer in the headlights staring at the camera. Very unfunny. Very unfunny. So recently, Ben Stiller did Tower Heist, and he did The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. I love both those movies, and I've watched them numerous times already. They're more serious movies. And by the way, Chris Rock was in Death at a Funeral. Similarly, in that movie, he plays a more serious character, and he's worth watching. I guess a third example would be Adam Sandler. Again, in straight comedy, he's horrendous, and you cannot watch the guy without wanting to throw up. But in a romantic comedy, where again, Sandler is trying, and he is funny because he's trying to be serious and be good and all that, but bad things happen kind of thing, or he seems stumbling or bumbling or whatever, And he's kind of funny. The really funny one with Jack Nicholson, Anger Management. I love that movie. And Sandler plays the straight guy. Nicholson plays the comic. Great stuff. So in the case of Russell Brand, I don't think there's any hope for this guy. I don't think there's any genre of movies that he will excel at. And well, with one exception, he could be a bad guy in a movie. Being a bad guy is an easy part to play. You're critical, you're scornful, you break things, you shoot and threaten people. That violence is easy. Being the good guy is the hard thing. Well, in this world, we need more good guys, right? In the movie world, they need more good bad guys. Well, I've got one for you, Russell Brand. Knock yourself out. It's funny, the Russell Brand story, the link, if you just look at the picture that they show, he's talking. I don't know what he's saying, but whoa. You just look at the face and you're looking at a lunatic. Next story, child handcuffed and school policies questioned. A four-year-old child with attention deficit disorder caused a ruckus in the pre-K classroom. And when the principal could not restore calm, the local sheriff handcuffed the child and took him away in a squad car. Quotes the mom, "My son is a very loving, caring, protective little boy. He deserves to go to school and feel safe and know that he'll come back home to his mommy, that he won't be carted off like a criminal." She says officials provoked the child with their show of force. Virginia places no limits on the use of physical restraints in school. But it would be illegal if you did it at your home. If a parent does it, it's illegal. But there's no limit, zero limits, on the use of physical restraints in schools in Virginia. Her son, now 5 years of age, has been suspended indefinitely and suffers nightmares as a result of his encounter. My final thought on this story, the Gestapo is starting to look pretty tame by comparison with life in America today. A new trend here, Tablet Magazine starts charging commenters. As a number of news sites eliminate their comments section altogether, Tablet, a daily online magazine of Jewish news and culture, is introducing a new policy charging its readers to comment on articles. The value of comment sections has been a hot topic over the past few months, with news outlets like Chicago Sun-Times, Popular Science, Reuters, Recode, Mike, M-I-C, The Week, and Bloomberg switching off readers' comments. First of all, this has been a trend. Ever since they started forcing you to log in to leave comments, the trend started there. I used to read comments for stories. Now, in most cases, I don't because they're not accessible. You have to log in to read them, which is to say they want to track you. They want to know that you've come to their site. They want to track, what are you reading? What are you doing? We're tracking it all. We're going to sell it all. We're building up a profile about you so we can use it against you in the future. I don't want any of that. So I don't log in. I don't leave comments. I don't read comments anymore. Well, the comments are 10 times as valuable as the stories. All the stories are the same. They control the media. 6 companies control everything. Of course the stories are going to be the same. It's going to be the same lie. I don't care about that lie. I care about what the individuals say about it. Interesting that when I started working with computers in, let's call them community, well, I guess you could argue the first community computer-related networking and social networks was bulletin boards. In the early days of computers, some brilliant people wrote bulletin board programs. They were very sophisticated. For their time, they were max programs. They used the maximum features and memory and power of computers at that time. And basically, they were hosting a website. Only it wasn't a website because there was no web. It was a bulletin board, and you could phone a number. And it would be kind of like, I guess, the experience of going to your library online. Just the library. And you can go there and you can do various things, right? Well, these bulletin boards, you could leave messages, you could read messages. If someone wanted to share an article or a story with you, they could. They had upload and download abilities. Usually to download, you had to have earned credits, and you earned credits by uploading. So, of course, a lot of that was, you know, a lot of those activities were illegal. They were encouraging illegal things. So I got involved in that because I wanted to use the bulletin board technology to promote the Caballero philosophy. And so we created PBBO, Philosophy Bulletin Board. Got myself thoroughly immersed in the bulletin board code. And like I say, very complicated, very advanced code. One of the things I did as I poured through the code was I found it had back doors. It had ways to break in. So the point is they put weaknesses into the code. on purpose. And so when you get that code and you try and use it, if they don't like you, they can break in and they can take you down. And of course they did that. So I found these back doors, as they're called, and I took them out. And then they still found ways to crash the philosophy of Baltimore, because after all, it was constructive and they didn't want that. And so I just put in a very simple mechanism. Once a day, the Baltimore would reset itself. It would just automatically cycle the power using hardware. Now, the hardware would cycle through a timer and it would reboot. And so even if you crashed it, it would force a reboot and it would come up and everything would be working. Well, the amount of work it took to get that all seamless so that it would boot up and automatically log in and all that, it was a massive project. It took like 4 or 5 years. I think the total visitors I got over a period of like 4 years was in the range of a few hundred, let's say 400 visitors. Roughly 100 visitors a year. Well, when I left Cavalarians.com, I take credit for the major part of growing that site, because what I did was I added names. People wanted names. They wanted more names. They kept sending names and emailing names. And the other people who were involved in the project, they didn't want to add more names. They would have been fine if they never added more names. And eventually they cut off access to the names, made it so you had to pay for the names, and basically took them away. They didn't get it. Well, I realized the names and adding names was the engine of the site. That's what got people coming back. So I added 300 names a day for years. I don't remember how many years. And eventually the site had like over the million names. And the site went from, we had 2 visitors today. It went from that to 2 million a year. And it's still one of the largest sites. So comments, what I was going to get to was, with Philosophy Bulletin Board, I stripped out parts of the site. There was no comment section. I realized it was garbage right off the bat. I remember, just remember vividly one ad that we're talking now 25, 30 years ago, where a guy was trying to sell his truck. I still remember this ad. This is a Philosophy Bulletin Board. A guy's trying to sell his truck. So you have to realize when something belongs and when it doesn't belong. Well, comments belong, especially when they're lying to us. We want to be able to comment on it. Well, let's turn it around. Let's imagine you are they. You want to lie to people. You want to control them. Well, then you don't want comments. And that's where we're at today. Charging people. Well, when you charge people, the people that are the trolls, the people that are part of the 1%, they can afford an infinite charge, right? In fact, you just give them access so that they don't even need any money, right? You just say, here's the code. You can come in because you're one of us. And that way you control the message. The other thing they do these days is moderation. You may recall the thread where it was about microwave radiation. They were trying to downplay a study. The study found that cell phones cause cancer. And they tried to downplay the size of the study, the quality of the study, the size of the effects, blah, 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 everything they did. And so I went into the comments and in the comments, they had like 20 people. And the 20 people were all saying the same thing. They were all contemptuous of the article. Ha, ha, ha. We're smart and they're dumb. And I responded to 5 or 6 of these comments at the same time. I immediately got downvoted as if what I said was worth nothing. Where in fact, it was the only truth, anything resembling the truth, in the comment system, or in the article for that matter. So I commented about that. I was encouraging the downvotes. I was like, bring it. So they downvoted me again. And then I kept checking in and I started telling about my video about microwave radiation. Well, now that's going to bother them. And so then, you know, more downvotes and more burying. And then they brought in the big guns. They brought in their guy who was like the closer. He was like the guy who, when you got someone who knows what they're talking about, this is how you deal with them. You pretend you're the expert, you discredit everything they're doing. So this guy tried to do that with me. And all I said, one word reply, I said, hilarious. He was hilarious, and I simply wasn't going to buy into anything he was saying. Well, they didn't like that, and they promptly banned me. So it was impossible for me to leave a comment. It was a fantastic study in their attempt to completely control the message, including the comments. It was really awesome. I'm so glad it happened, and I've documented it in the Floydcast. The site that did this is Ars Technica. I have nothing but contempt for them now and forever because of this. And you're seeing more and more sites behaving this way. The trolls, the professionals who are paid to force a certain message, are getting stronger and stronger. They have all the money. So in other words, these guys can be paid to do this. It can be a living for them to lie in the comments, to down-moderate the good comments, to up-moderate the bad comments. And now they're going to charge and make you pay to comment, which will shut off comments completely, because we, the 99%, can't afford to pay to comment. My final note about this story: as long as the 1% are around and perfectly dispersed in society, they will always undermine any attempt at truth. And to get to my of the weeks, bad driver of the week. The story's from Wired. An autonomous car is going to cross country for the first time. This car is going to drive across the entire country, 3,500 miles, by itself. Now, it's going to be monitored. I imagine they're probably going to have people sitting in there, but they're not operating it. It was an interesting article, and it's being done by Delphi. Delphi makes components for cars. They don't make cars. So why are they doing this? Well, they're perceiving that the self-driving car is going to become popular. People are going to need components. They want to get into that business. This is going to be a big business. They talk about the types of cameras, the type of car. They've chosen a 2014 Audi SQ5. Quote, chosen simply because it's cool. No, really. All the cameras they got in it, why they're getting into this business, some of the benefits, you know, from these self-driving cars. And they say in this trip, this test, they expect this car to be able to handle everything, including, you know, pedestrians, cyclists coming into your lane, everything. Quote, virtually anything you would do on the highway, the car will be capable of doing as well. That means maintaining a steady speed and safe distance from other cars, passing slower vehicles, and if it gets cut off or a couch falls off a pickup truck right in front of it, the car will do the smart thing, brake as hard as possible, and move to the left or right if it's safe. Well, isn't that wonderful? Re-listen of the week. Warning, do not listen to this if you don't want it stuck in your head. I listened to Carly Rae Jepsen. She came up with a song called Call Me Maybe, which is a very catchy, addictive song, by the way. Well, this one is called I Really Like You. And the video features Tom Hanks doing the singing, lip-syncing. The video is kind of corny, kind of lame. Tom Hanks doesn't sound like Carly Rae Jepsen. And so you have to stretch while you're listening. Is it Jepsen or Jensen? I might have written that down wrong. It does build up nicely, and eventually there's sort of a vaudevillian, chorus-linian, stagey number at the end where Hanks and Carly Rae, you know, a bunch of professional dancers are all moving about a bit while they sing this song. The song, you know, you can listen to the song and go, well, it's a typical song. It's got probably auto-tune. She probably didn't write it. The video is not even really all that great. Why is it so popular? You know, millions of views. Why? Well, it's catchy. And most importantly, it's upbeat. This is a very downbeat world. And, you know, human nature, we need the upbeat. I was rewatching a bit of Saving Mr. Banks, the Disney, supposedly sort of Disney biography type movie about Disney himself, played by Hanks, and how they, Mary Poppins, the story of Mary Poppins, played by Emma Thompson, the author, she's, you know, stick in the mud, and not to be easily convinced, very controlling, very dour, and how they gradually win her over. One of the things that was interesting, and I just, as I say, I only caught part of it recently, rewatched it. The two guys, they've got a whole crew working full-time on this Mary Poppins and trying to turn this into a musical. And two guys are sitting at the piano like they used to do in the old days, and they're trying to be creative and composing, and they're doing this song about a spoonful of sugar. And a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. And they came up with the idea that the medicine going down, they said, what if we go up? And so the music goes up when the medicine goes down. Well, that's the upbeat. That's what this world needs. That's what the song needed. And that's what this world needs. It needs the upbeat. They know this. They torture us. They abuse us. They suck our money out. They punish us and lie to us continuously. So no bloomin' wonder that when they come up with a song with an upbeat, even if it's about as repetitive and almost childish as this song is, no wonder we like it. We're desperate. We're desperate for an upbeat. Don't click that link unless you really want to have that song embedded in you for a while. My reread of the week, I finished The Infinity Puzzle by Frank Close. You know, as I talk about in my latest Kosult article, The Comedy of Science, I say The Infinity Puzzle is about Nobel seekers. People trying to win the Nobel Prize. That's what it's about. It was a genuine puzzle, what they were trying to do with physics. They think they came up with an answer, a number of answers, after many decades of work. I don't think they did. They came up with a hack, and it's actually a hack of a hack, a copied hack. It solves nothing, it explains nothing. It's embarrassing, honestly. And they themselves even admit, you know, sort of, now what? We still don't know why we have all these numbers. The standard model has all these numbers, all these constants. And they're like, we don't know why. And why are these numbers so close together that if they were slightly different, the whole system wouldn't work? It's like they took apart a watch, and they measured the force of each spring. They measured the quality of the metal. They admired the precision of the machining and engineering of the watch. But they don't know how it works. They just got all these pieces, and they're like, now what? So I finished that book, sort of good riddance. You know, I took notes, took like 17 pages of notes, little pages. But it's getting harder to use the material, because it's really an example of what not to do. This was a very large book, 500 pages, and it was a great example of what not to do. The author was stupendous. He could not have been better. Everything he did was textbook. If you're looking for how to write a physics book or how to write any kind of an authoritative scientific book, this book was terrific. But what was going on for all those decades? These people fighting and clawing for Nobels, and what they ended up supposedly accomplishing and what they got their Nobel Prizes for, it's embarrassing, man. It really and truly is. Whew, gee. All right, moving on. Rewatch of the week. Quick, easy, fun one. The ridiculously clever Zach King and his 5-second vines. I guess Vine is a 5-second video. Might be 6 seconds. What can you do in 5 seconds? Well, if you go to look at these vines, you'll see. If you type just vines into YouTube, it'll all come up. Well, this guy Zach King, he's particularly creative and amazing with his videos. And then you can get these, want to say anthologies, is that the word? Where they string a whole bunch of them together. Montage of them, I guess. And so the video might be like 5 or 10 minutes long, and it's nothing but 5-second videos, which each one is amazing. And it's for 5 minutes. So that's what this link is. It's pretty good stuff. Next story, microwaving a microwave. So this is a site. I don't really know what their game is. I'm not totally trustworthy of this site or this video publisher. But they order a microwave, this world's smallest, from some Middle Eastern country. They have to wait for it. It costs $1,000. They get it, and they promptly put it into one of the largest microwaves you can get. And they put the light bulb inside the microwave, and when you turn it on and apply the power, the light bulb lights up. Anyway, they just roast this microwave, and, you know, really, there's sort of no point to it. It has some random music associated with it. One good thing, they have kind of a long description. When you're on YouTube, you can read this kind of a long description, but in there, I call it the tagline. It says, remember, microwaving food is for morons. So I guess that's why I'm including the video, just because of that line. It really makes me chuckle. NASA, the end of mankind, leaked document, 2013. This is sort of a conspiratorial document where supposedly it's sort of revealing the real intent behind the scenes. You can watch it and make up your own mind about it. 2 million views. Likes to dislikes, 6-1. 6-1. You know, if it's garbage, it'll get it 100-1. If it has some truth in it, it'll get a poor rating like this, 6-1. If it has a lot of truth and tells you how to change your life for the better, you will get either no likes at all. I came up with my video, Thinking Your Own Thoughts. I immediately got a dislike. I mean, literally the first day. I am very proud of that dislike. That is my favorite dislike across the entire YouTubian world. Because it's a troll dislike. It's someone who's, there's a word for it. They're basically paid to monitor you. And as soon as something you come up with is particularly threatening, they will label it. And of course, nowadays what they do with the likes on YouTube and with Google, they meter you. They meter you in proportion to how much money you give them to pay for AdWords. And they meter you according to your message. I realize with my website, they've been metering me. They've been controlling how many people go to my site. And if you look at it statistically across years and years, my site is ridiculously consistent beyond all logical explanation. Oh, it oscillates. It oscillates slightly, maybe 10%, 20% a day. But even the oscillations are predictable. And it's been like that for years and years. No matter what I do, no matter how much I do or don't do, Sometimes I'll go for periods of time, months, or weeks or months, where I don't have time to put time into the site. I don't change the articles. I don't change anything. I just keep publishing my quotes every day. And the amount of people that go to my site is the same. Exactly the same. And I do great changes, and it's all exactly the same. I'm throttled. It's like you have a governor on the gas pedal, and you can only go so fast in that rented truck. I have that throttle on me. And that's what they're doing now. It's a throttled world. The only way we can change that is if we recommend something to somebody. When we do that, then we have a chance. But of course, these days people are distracted. We have a limited circle of friends. Once you've told your 10 friends about something, now what? So we live in controlled times, very much so, and you see it everywhere. Cool and uncool thing of the week. All right, let's do an uncool one and then a couple of cool ones. I call this uncool and seriously tacky headline of the week. Here it is. It's a long headline. Rand Paul wins meaningless CPAC straw poll for third year running. Well, thank goodness they put the word meaningless in there. Otherwise, if I heard Rand Paul, I might go, this is something I'm interested in. Thank you for telling me it's meaningless when somebody wins something. Oh, it's because they're the bad good guys. Oh, now I'm starting to understand. Quote, on Saturday, Republican presidential hopeful won the Conservative Political Action Conference's presidential straw poll. Now notice, they don't say Rand Paul again. They've done their due diligence. They've reported his name once. They're not going to give him any more free press. So it's Republican presidential hopeful. If that isn't vague enough for you, we can add another adjective. One, the Conservative, now they spell out Political Action Conference's presidential straw poll for the third consecutive year. Now, does straw poll sound flattering? It doesn't sound flattering to me. Only three winners of 20 previous CPAC straw polls went on to win the party's nomination for president. So now there's more downplaying, more meaninglessness, as they would say, of the result. So they're saying, look elsewhere. Look to the Republicans and Democrats. Trust us. Vote the same as you did last time. Go back to watching television. My notes, I say, the Democrat biased and controlling media doesn't like Rand Paul. Message received. Thanks. My final word on that headline, maroons. That would be morons if I thought morons was funny, but I think maroons is funny. Some actions are so ridiculously stupid and obvious. They get the maroon label from now on. All right, cool thing of the week. Novel LED packaging adds filaments to retro bulbs. They managed to make bulbs that are LED lights that look just like old school light bulbs. And then the cool thing is because, light bulbs had some real sort of engineering limitations, the tungsten size and the bulb will burn out if you make the filament too long and all these kind of things. They had a lot of limits. Well, these are LEDs, and so it's like a different technology. And they showed like this gigantic bulb, like this bulb like over a foot long, which is an LED bulb that looks like a regular bulb. Kind of cool. All right, another cool one. The Secret Life of the Aluminum Can, a Feat of Engineering. I have to be honest, I'm trying to remember if I read this article. It was one of these sort of juicy, longer articles, and, often I plan to read it, and I don't even know if I fulfilled it. I think I did sort of skim read it or read most of it. It was pretty interesting. The engineering that goes into the can, I'm remembering now as I talk, there's like coatings, special coatings in there. An awful lot goes into it. Worthwhile read. My fact of the week. Condé Nast, the publishers of Wired, has signed a 25-year lease for 22 floors of one World Trade Center. So they're going to be there 25 years. They're one of the anchor tenants of this gigantic building. How much are they going to pay for their rent for 25 years? $2 billion. Oh, man. Here's another good one. Global debt rose $57 trillion since the year 2007. So in 8 years, it's gone up $57 trillion. What's that? Roughly $7 trillion a year. Well, where is the $7 trillion going to? It's going to the 1% of the 1%. It's going to the elite of the elite. When you work it out in terms of, because that's just, they've created money, and then they loan it to the government, that's the debt they've created. They don't get all that back right away, right? The government spends it, and then you have to sort of track that money down. You have interest payments, yada, yada. You get a percentage of that back every year. I worked it out that roughly the bankers are getting $1 trillion a year more than in 2007, based on the money they've printed in the last 8 years. You know, it's a private company that prints it and loans it back to the government, yada yada. Third fact of the week. Half the baby rats fed GM soy died within 3 weeks. So right now there's this GM thing, genetically modified foods. They don't want to put it on the label. Why not? Obviously, because it's bad. There cannot be any other reason. Period. End of story. It's a one-sentence story. And yet it's a huge debate and it's going on and on. Half the baby rats fed genetically modified soy died within 3 weeks. I don't know. That just doesn't sound all that terrific. A couple of quotes of the week. This one from Terry Pratchett, the fellow that passed away, the writer. The five-ish guy. Anger is wonderful. It keeps you going. I'm angry about bankers. About the government. Okay, well, if you're a 595, yes. You are angry and it keeps you going. And you're angry about those things. All of that fits your first name, Terry. We have to have a little bit of a better strategy, though. By the way, one of the things I wanted to get into writing, get into a Floyd cast, you know, one of the ways they control certain people is they off them, they kill them. And then they leave a poorly written suicide note where the person ranted and raved and yada yada, and they speak for the person for their final words. So they get rid of a problem, and then they get back on message with the fake note. So I just wanted to read right into the record that I'm perfectly happy with my life. I'm not intending to go anywhere by my choice. So if something were to happen to me, you can believe the 1% are involved. Alright, the other quote I want to finish up with. I was watching a few James Garner quotes, just little short ones from the Archive of American Television. I forget how I got started on the James Garner ones, but this guy is just very likable. He's just so genuine, confident, generous. I think you could make an argument that, you know, James Garner is as good as anybody. Pick your category. He's just an awesome guy. Quote, I think I'd almost rather deal with a mogul than a committee. Anything run by a committee is going to get screwed up. No doubt about it. The quote was referring to Jack Warner, his dealings with Jack Warner from Warner Brothers, a guy that was, you know, sort of notoriously difficult to deal with, and yet he gave an example of Warner being on his side and helping him out. And then he came out with that quote. Awesome stuff. So this has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast number 57 for March the 16th, 2015, the day after Pi Day. Good luck with your life. Take care.